Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Lots of excitement as we welcome actor Jason Thompson from General Hospital to the show. Jason portrays Dr. Patrick Drake and talks about being a Canadian actor in Hollywood and what it's like being on such a legendary daytime drama. Recording artist Lindsay Mack stops by to discuss her latest album, Animal Again, and how the cello has played an important part of her musical journey. Prince Edward Island artist Tim Chasen talks about his CD, Lost in Light, and Quebec's Tamara Weber-Filion explains what it's like being on The Voice and her debut album, Time, Wind, and Fire.
Capture your need for sound.
Hey, it's Kelly Alexander, and we are very happy to be joined by such a superstar from the world of General Hospital, Jason Thompson, a.k.a. Dr. Patrick Drake. Welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. First of all, longtime fan of GH, and if I've done my research correctly, this is like your 10th anniversary.
Do you guys mind keeping it down? We're trying to...
Is it 10th anniversary? Did you start in 2005?
I guess I was. Yeah, 2005. Yeah.
What does it
November,
feel like?
So
being
it'll be next November, I think.
That's crazy. What is it like, you know, being on a show for 10 years on GH, which is such a legacy show?
It's fantastic. I mean, to be an actor, to be consistently working for this long is kind of amazing feeling, realistically. It's the longest by far, obviously, mm-hmm. job that I've ever had, but I think what kind of smartens you up to the idea is doing these little kind of anniversary shows. Like, we went through the 50th anniversary, mm-hmm. which is, you know, you start thinking about something that's been on anything for 50 years. It's a very, very long time, especially in the TV world. And then we just did another throwback episode to 1963 where we recreated the pilot episode of General Hospital. And then I played Dr. Steve Hardy, who's arguably probably the first, you know, soap opera doctor, kind of great in this world. And so it was really great to take that on and kind of accept it. And I do it with humility and, you know, as much grace as I possibly can, because we wouldn't be in this position if it weren't for so many other actors and crew members and executive producers and writers that have done their job for, you know, the years before us. So for us to have the opportunity to continue the legacy is, it's not lost on me.
Has it been scary, Jason, with the fact that, because I remember in the 90s, there used to be like 16 soap operas.
Yeah.
There were so many of them. And now they've all dropped off, including like the Guiding Lights of the world, who had been on for decades and decades. And now
started
it's you
on
guys.
Radio.
Yeah, and now it's you guys and Young and the Restless and Bold and Beautiful and Days of Our Lives. So there's four shows left.
Right.
Is it scary for you guys as a community, like an acting community, thinking like maybe it could still go?
A couple of years ago, when especially on ABC, when One Life to Live and All My Children were canceled, we weren't sure what was going to happen. There was like, you know, you're kind of walking on ice on set. We didn't know what was happening. Our executive producer got let go. Our head writers got let go before that. So, you know, we didn't know if we were next or what was going to happen. But we believed that our fans and what we did on a daily basis would kind of keep us alive. And I mean, I think everybody on our set, from actors to crew and everybody else, really believed in General Hospital. And I still do believe in General Hospital. I think it's a show that kind of sets itself apart in a way. And it was different than the other ABC shows. And so I think we're all grateful that ABC stuck with us, for mm-hmm. sure. And fans have a lot to do with that. As far as an acting community seeing things change, there's a lot changing. Some of it for the better, some of it maybe not necessarily for the better. But what we see with happening with digital, online viewing, and you know, just cable, there's so many options now. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of acting. There's a lot of shows. There's so many available shows to watch. And I hope that, I think that there's a place for daytime still. Mm-hmm. I still feel that. I mean, I don't know anybody. A lot of people say that they still record the show.
Yep.
So, like, you used to have to watch it live. Well, that's,
right.
You don't have to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if anybody does anymore, realistically. Mm-hmm. So, we're still available to a lot of people because of how technology has changed. But at the same time, I think what you get with daytime television, a different way of telling story that you can't get anywhere else. And so, to me, I think it's part of the American fabric that I hope sticks around for a very, very long time, much, much past me.
Now, being on, you know, this soap and General Hospital and the legacy behind it, and knowing the fan support that you have, how important is social media to you? You know, because I find soap fans are a different breed. Like, they really not only fall in love with the character, but usually they will know who you are in real life.
Yeah.
As opposed to watching a, you know, a nighttime show where we get them once a week, like Scandal, for example, but you guys are in our homes 5 days a week.
Right, yeah. I think, I mean, for me, it's a balance you have to kind of keep, because we still do have private lives, and I don't mean that as like private, don't touch it, more just like, you know, these are characters that we play. We're not similar to them. I mean, there might be some similarities to us, but you know, there are people that that want a little bit more of, you know, that separation. But at the same time, it is a great tool to reach out to people, to communicate, to, you know, have gratitude for getting us to this place in a lot of ways. Because if fans don't respond, you know, fans didn't respond to me in the beginning, I wouldn't have a job still. Like, they're very vocal. If they don't like you, they let you know. And slowly but surely, you'll see if your numbers don't add up, because it is a numbers game. You know, this isn't... ABC's not a charity. They don't just give away things like this. You know, you have to work for it. And so it's a way to kind of, and even doing fan events and everything else, it's a way to say thank you and kind of give some time back. And so for me, the social media is, you know, I'm decently active on. I've never had a Facebook. I didn't do that, but I just kind of went straight to Twitter and Instagram. And Instagram for me is I love pictures. Twitter for me is a great way to get news related.
Yep.
And so I use it for that. Some people are more active on it. Some people aren't on it at all. But I think it's going in that direction. So the amount of information that is there, and I mean, we're asked to help out with social media at work, whether it's from publicity or executive producer or whatever, because I think it's pretty evident that that everybody uses it, or majority of people use it. And so, you know, it's another way to just kind of get to the fans and, you know, thank them and ask them to continue to support us.
How does it feel being a Canadian actor, being on this, you know, soap opera in the States, which is obviously seen around the world, but does it feel important? Do you feel still really connected to be a Canadian and doing what you do in Hollywood?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to feel very connected to Canada. I still, like, way more than majority of my family. I mean, I'm kind of started a life in Los Angeles, obviously, but my mom and dad and my brothers and their families and aunts and uncles and grandma and everything else, they're still up in Canada. I have bars and restaurants up there in Edmonton, so I still go back very often. I'm still very much connected to the Canadian culture. And but yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, Dom and I were talking about it. You feel like it's something of a, you know, a dream to go to Los Angeles and to be in the industry and to be a working actor. You know, you kind of... I feel personally you start out and that's what you want to do. You want to go to that length. And so to be in Los Angeles, to be part of the acting community, to be going to work every day as an actor, it's, you know, that's a pretty amazing feeling. But I do very much respect the Canadian film industry. Obviously, I have a lot of friends that continue to work up here. I have friends that make stuff up here all the time that live down in Los Angeles. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's fantastic to live in L.A. It's warmer.
Yes, this is true.
but it's always great to come back, you know. So and that's what General Hospital does. It allows you to kind of be able to come back and say hey to Canadian fans and, you know, hang out.
Now, I recently actually interviewed Sharon Case from The Young and the Restless, and she mentioned that, you know, she just celebrated her 20th year.
Okay.
I think this is her 21st, and she said, you know, that she really loves still being on the soap even after all these years. Do you see yourself being on General Hospital for, like, years to come? Because obviously you're such a solid character and I would say a pillar of that cast.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's, you know, as going back to when you kind of start out, when you feel this, I never had the idea like, oh, I want to get on a show and just stay there and, you know, that's all I want to do. It's nice to have a roof over your head and be able to support yourself and put food on the table for sure. But there's more to the art of it that you want to continue to kind of manifest. And so as much as it is amazing to be on a show this consistently, I still continue to audition. I still continue to try and develop other stories and, you know, get myself out there. Saying that, it's a complete gift to be able to, like I said, go to work every single day and be consistent in an industry that isn't that consistent. But yeah, I think we're always trying to keep it going. We always try and keep that, you know, the art engine running, and whether it's music and writing and whatever it is. So hard to say. Hopefully it's around for a very long time and the option is there for me. And I respect the genre and I respect General Hospital and everything else very, very much and all the people I work with. But it's hard to say, you know, I don't sit here right now and say, man, I hope I'm there for another 20 years.
Okay.
But at the same time, that's fantastic option, okay, you know, if it continues to go that way. But, you know, life changes. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Might have 17 kids and need to stay there. I might
maybe
not.
Have to
I
move
might
back to Canada and open a ranch.
Yeah, south of France and just hang out and make wine. I don't know. You know, it changes. So I'm very much aware of that.
Awesome. Jason, thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Spending time with us.
Thanks
Jason,
for having me.
Jason Thompson of General Hospital, Kelly Alexander on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Good job, Kelly.
And a big thank you going out to Gina and Shapressa from CH Elegant Entertainment for coordinating the interview with Jason Thompson. Make sure to check out their website, chelegant.ca. That is chelegant.ca.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're happy to welcome an artist from Cambridge, Massachusetts, who has steadily been bringing her career to the next level. She's not only a vocalist and songwriter, but an accomplished cellist as well. Lindsay Mack, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Awesome. Thank you.
So I want to kick things off, Lindsay, by asking you how your musical journey kicked off in life.
Oh, boy. I think probably in the womb. My parents were, on the hippie side of things, and we're very much into listening to vinyl and partying with their friends. And my dad is an amateur singer. So I kind of was born into that world. And then my whole family sang in church choir. We weren't necessarily religious at all, but singing was a fun way for us to connect to the community. So that's kind of my early stuff. And then I started private lessons in piano and cello a little bit later.
Now, you have a huge affection for cello, I would say. Can you tell us about it and why you decided to actually use that instrument as a writing tool on some of your past material? Because I think some people would say that would be an odd choice at best to use as a writing tool, but very cool nonetheless.
Yeah, well, I was really serious about the cello for so long in the classical way, because that's obviously what the path that you take generally. And when I realized that I wanted to be a songwriter, I felt I had this huge weapon in my arsenal, and it wasn't really, I mean, there were cellos in folk bands and pop bands, but they're always bowing long notes and sitting down, and that was cool, but I thought the cello actually had like a whole bigger potential. So I sort of went for it and made the cello my main writing instrument. So I would strap it onto my back or my chest, and I would stand and strum and sing. And it was cool. It opened up some doors for me for sure. And I got to bring this instrument that I had shared so much of my life with on this new journey. It was fun.
How would, writing with the cello actually work out? Like, is it that you write melodies with it? Because I'm sort of like out of my realm knowing how you would even start writing with the cello.
Yeah, well, it evolved over time. But I mean, one thing the cello can always sort of handle is a bass line. So I would get like the roots of chords from the cello, and then with different fingerings and different chord shapes, I would create different sort of vibes, sad, happy, minor, major, all that kind of stuff. And the melodies, the vocal melodies, I would always just come up with singing. So a tape recorder was always at my side, and a lot of internal music was happening because I could hear the other stuff happening, but of course I couldn't make it all with the cello, but I could make the important stuff. So that's how that started.
Now, how did your latest album, Animal Again, come about? Because I understand it has something to do with you recovering from a back injury, if I've done my homework.
Yes, you've done your homework. And the back injury, unfortunately, was in large part due to the cello and the way I was holding it and just being like a road warrior and playing so many shows and sitting down while traveling and then standing up and doing something really athletic and then sitting down for another 10 hours. So I had to take a break from playing the cello at all, and in fact wasn't really able to sit down for a while. So I made a stand-up desk and started working on my computer in GarageBand and making beats and stuff. And already before the back injury, I was sort of missing the really big, expansive feeling of like what being in a symphony would feel like. And the music I was listening to is more sort of electronic and pop music, stuff with a lot of big production. And so I just started making that kind of stuff, thinking that the cello may or may not come back. And in this project, it didn't. And it's been actually really freeing and fun for me just to not have anything holding me back in terms of what sounds I want to make.
I have to ask you about sort of quote-unquote letting go of the cello for a moment, just on this new project even, because
you know, in a way, I can't imagine having to, you know, say goodbye to, in your case, the cello because of physical injury, right? But you had to do that and you sort of had to, you know, sort of accommodate yourself and move forward. Was it hard to say goodbye in a way? Like, even though I know you've been able to sort of return to it, but did you try to embrace it as a positive?
Yeah, I mean, luckily I was sort of feeling a sea change internally about the kind of sound I wanted to create anyway. And so I wasn't fighting myself artistically, thankfully. Like, I didn't think, oh, I have like the best idea for another cello album. But it is really hard. I mean, I would say, honestly, it's the hardest from a marketing standpoint, because at the very beginning, obviously people looked at me when I played the cello that way and thought, oh my God, what a weirdo. But very shortly, it actually became a door opener for me, because there's so many people who play the guitar or the piano, and this at least got their attention, and whether I could hold their attention or not, of course, had to do with my songs and my lyrics and whatever. But even just getting that step up was really helpful. And leaving the cello out of this project has put me, you know, back where most people are, which is a singer with a band. And that's kind of been the hardest part. And a few fans, I guess, were like only in it for the cello. Mm-hmm. But most of the response I've gotten, in fact, like the vast majority, has been really positive. And so, you know, at the end of the day, even if that wasn't the case, I just have to do what I feel internally anyway. And that's what this is.
Hanging out with us on the show is recording artist Lindsay Mack from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Make sure to check out her website, lindsaymack.com. You mentioned earlier that you've been sort of heading down this electronic dance music path, if you will, and I know a lot of people refer to it as EDM, so we'll say that. It seems that obviously you've been embracing EDM. What has drawn you to this type of sound? Like, how did you go from cello to EDM?
Right. Good question. Well, part of it was the injury, and I had to go to the gym all the time or rehab, and they always had, you know, the top 40 radio station on, and I just found it really motivating, like a consistent beat, something that like brings you up and brings you down and motivates you in a physical sort of way, translates emotionally too. Like, I think it's really cool in arty circles to diss pop music a lot, but I think, at least for me, there's just something organic that happens when I listen to it. It just makes me feel better. And I wanted to give that to my fans, and I wanted to immerse myself in that music. I wanted it to give me energy as opposed to me putting out energy all the time. I mean, obviously, you got to put out the energy anyway, but it's just been a really fulfilling feeling for me to hear the sounds like swirl all around me in this really thick sort of soup. And hopefully that inspires other people when they're listening to it and they like it too.
I'm actually really glad that I have you on the phone here talking about this, because I'm a huge EDM fan, and you know, the pop world as well. I'm a huge Janet fan. All my listeners know that. So it's interesting actually to speak to someone who comes from a classical background, if you will, with your cello playing, and that you actually would embrace EDM, because as you mentioned, so many people like to diss electronic dance music or dance music in general as being like, you know, thoughtless, and you just, you know, hop on your computer and slap a few beats together. What do you say to people that really do have that thought process, especially because you come from, you know, a place where you play instrumentation and you know how hard it is to play classical music, and obviously you find energy, like you mentioned, in EDM?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is it's a whole hell of a lot harder than it looks. Like you said, you can't just throw a couple beats together and have it work. I mean, there are plenty of songs out there that try to just do the formula, and most of them fall short, but there is I wouldn't say a tried and true formula, but there's something about our internal rhythm as humans that we like to expect something to happen and then maybe have to wait for it a little bit longer than we thought, but then we like the payoff. And that's what I love about EDM is it gives you the payoff. And I guess in general, for people who feel that way, you know, I'm not going to change their minds, but to me, like, music is just this great, big, huge world, and there's really nothing not to like. There's just stuff that moves you more than others, and kind of at a time where I feel like the world is really complicated and, you know, unfortunately, kind of depressing in the world news and all that, there's just something really valuable to me about letting a song take you on a ride and feeling like it's all, you know, like the light is coming out from the clouds. And I think that's really valuable. So that's what I would say. I would say maybe have a few beers and listen again and see what you think.
Now, talk to us about your album, Animal Again. What's the vibe of it, and what do you want people to take away from it overall?
I just want them to be enveloped in the sound and kind of use it, you know, in their daily life as like a soundtrack to what they're doing. I mean, that would be the ideal. It's about me kind of coming back to my roots, ironically. I just feel like I'm back to more of my quote unquote primal self in this album, even though it's more produced and there's nothing that human about it. There's not, you know, there's a lot of electronic instruments. It feels very human to me, and it feels very foundational. And that goes back to the beat, I think, and the synths and all that stuff. But yeah, just coming back into my own and feeling like I really own my destiny and own what kind of music I want to make. And, you know, hopefully the haters will be few and the lovers will be large.
Now, I read an interview, or it was something where you were quoted saying that you want to recreate the colors that you hear in your head. What does that mean exactly, and have you achieved it on your album, Animal Again?
I'm always trying to achieve it. So I feel pretty happy with the album in that I think I've come the closest I've ever come to achieving that. I guess when you're talking about an audio art form, it's really hard to talk about sound, right? Because it's something you experience through your ears. It's not something you can describe. And color is kind of the same way. Like, you see it with your eyes and you can say, well, it's pinkish or it's bluish, but like, what does that mean? Unless you know what pink and blue look like to your eyes. So the colors in my head are just another way of relating it to sound. And my producer and I would talk a lot about, like, it needs to be brighter here. It needs to be cloudier here. It needs to be, you know, mistier here, you know, and he would know what I was talking about. And that was a really cool way to communicate.
Now, you have a large Twitter following, over 30,000 people, which I think is really impressive, especially, you know, because it's not like we hear you on Top 40 Radio all the time at the moment. So how important is it for you to connect with your social media followers? And do you feel like they've helped to push your career further and sort of spread the word about Lindsay Mack?
Totally. I'm a person that, like, at my core doesn't love social media. It doesn't feel inherent to who I am. But, you know, a while back I realized without any, like, sort of microphone, so to speak, of how to communicate with people, I was going to be lost. I wasn't going to know what was working. I wasn't going to know if my music was affecting people. And so, yeah, I jumped on board of that stuff. And I love connecting with my fans, actually. It's surprisingly, I like it a lot more than I ever thought I would. We're all just people, right? And Twitter is a great way just to simply just be out in the world with not a huge amount of commitment, but also be accessible and hear what other people are up to and share, you know, images and sounds and whatever. And yeah, I think it's definitely an important part of a artist's arsenal is their social media.
What advice would you have for a young artist coming up and trying to do, you know, not what you're doing, but kind of, you know what I mean? Like someone who has a passion, and because it just seems like it's such a hard path to follow.
Yeah. You know, well, that would be the first thing is it's hard. Like, don't think that the record companies are going to come knocking. And obviously you have to put out something of high quality like that. That's kind of the first thing. But once you do, that doesn't mean anything, unfortunately. You've got to work it. You've got to do that social media thing. You've got to play a lot of shows. You've got to be creative about how you tell people about it. Because, you know, a lot of people can make stuff in their bedrooms right now that sounds pretty damn good. And quality is not the thing that's going to make people pop. It's everything. So that's what I would say. I would also say, do it because you love it, because my God, if you don't, then it's going to really wear you down. And it's just, it's too hard of a career to choose if you're not completely in love with it. Yeah. And then be tenacious, just you know, if something sounds cool to you, but it's never been done and it sounds weird, that probably means it's even better. So go for it.
What is up next for Lindsay Mack in the next, you know, six, eight months, even a year?
Well, we're finishing up the final touches on the Remember music video, which is a single off of the EP. So that'll be out in a week or two. And then we have more songs that we're working on and hopefully get a full length out at the end of this year or the beginning of next is our goal.
Fantastic. Lindsay, thank you so much for spending time with us on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it.
That's recording artist Lindsay Mack. Again, check out her website, lindsaymack.com.
I remember when we left that bar. I remember how we said goodnight. I can see
next guest hails from Prince Edward Island and is a versatile artist playing five instruments, including the fiddle, mandolin, and banjo. He's been honored with several music awards and has performed as far away as Australia. He's just released his third album, Lost in Light, and is here to talk to us all about it. Tim Chasen, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kelly. How's it going?
Great, and we're really excited to have you on the show. I've been so fortunate the last little while to be interviewing a lot of East Coast artists, and it's been great just to see what a rising, burgeoning scene you guys have out East. I wanted to ask you, Did you know that music was going to be like a career for you at a young age?
I didn't know like necessarily that it was going to be like a career. I think like I always kind of played music and, you know, everybody in my family played, and it was just kind of a normal thing that everybody did. And I had some older cousins and stuff that did a bit of touring. And yeah, so like when I kind of played in the band, I toured a bit when I was in high school. But when you're that young, you just don't, you know, you don't know what's going on. I did university for a little bit, and then it was like, okay, yeah, I actually want to try to play music full time and make this a, you know, a career. So I kind of think I knew that I wanted to do it, but I didn't know like what it actually took to do it and what, you know, kind of that kind of thing. But yeah, it's been great. I love doing it as a, you know, as a career. I've been doing it for the last couple of years, so full time.
Now, What was the first instrument that you actually learned how to play? Because we mentioned off the top that you actually know how to play five of them, including the guitar and piano.
Yeah, fiddle was my first instrument. So yeah, like it's kind of a tradition in my family to be like a fiddle player. So everybody, you know, it's been passed down for like five or six generations, and as a big family, and everybody plays. It's kind of the first thing that all of my my family members started off on. Yeah.
And with regards to the other instruments, which is your favorite, and is that the one that you actually write your music from or based off of?
Well, that's a tough question. I think that the fiddle is a lot of fun. Like, and I do some writing on the fiddle, but when I'm songwriting, I usually tend to use the guitar. I don't know, it's just a little bit of a better tool than the fiddle to write on. But so yeah, I do. I mostly play guitar on my show, but I do a little bit of fiddle. Like, I play in another band that where I'm just a fiddle player. Like that, I just started as a fun thing. But yeah, so like both are kind of have their, you know, pros, I guess. There's not really any cons. So.
Now, how would you describe your sound? We mentioned off the top that you are from the East Coast. Do you find that obviously that has impacted your sound quite a bit? But how would you describe your sound?
Yeah, you know, that I always find it tough to kind of explain to people. Like, it's kind of, you know, like folky, but you know, like a little bit of pop and like a little bit of like kind of country or all country, I guess. And just kind of all mixed together, a little bit of bluegrassy kind of stuff in there. But definitely being from the East Coast it has a huge impact on it, because there's so much music out there. And then you get to, you know, when you get into the scene a bit, you're just always influenced by your peers, like all your songwriting friends. And but growing up there, you know, some of the bigger acts to come out of there were like Great Big Sea and like the Rankin Family and a lot of fiddle players like Natalie McMaster and Oshel McIsaac. And so growing up as them being like what I listened to as a kid definitely had a huge impact. It's just kind of like that, like songwriting and storytelling is a big thing out there. So, yeah.
I've talked to a fair amount of artists, as I mentioned, from out east. Rhea May is one, David Miles. As far as I know, they're based around that Halifax area. Is that where you are? Because I know we said that you come from Prince Edward Island. I'm assuming it's hard to get noticed out of PEI, considering it's so small.
Yeah, well, you know what? I still live in PEI, and there is actually tons of really great artists on PEI that still live there. Like, it's because it is kind of close to Halifax, you know, just a couple hours, and you take, you know, hop on the boat or hop on the bridge, and yeah, no, there is a lot of great music on PEI, and but yeah, it's kind of like a collective scene, like between the East, like the like Nova Scotia artists in Newfoundland and New Brunswick and PEI. It's kind of that like Atlantic Canada feel. Like, it's kind of like we're a group of, you know, we kind of associate ourselves with one another out there. So it's not like you know, a huge separation between each of the provinces. Like, yeah, like I know Rhea May and David quite well, and always bump into them, you know, back home and stuff. So.
Has it ever crossed your mind, Tim, that you're going to have to maybe make the move to like a bigger center, like a Toronto or a Vancouver or even Montreal? I know Rhea mentioned that she came to Montreal for a couple months to write and found it very sort of inspiring.
Yeah, totally. Like, I've never, like, the last couple of years I've always kind of thought about moving to a bigger city. And then I was just on the road so much that it was like I wasn't really ever home anyways. Like, I actually haven't been on PEI since the beginning of November. But yeah, so it's one of those things that when I do get off the road, like I have a house on Prince Edward Island, that it's kind of like when you do have like a couple of weeks off, it's kind of nice to like go and chill out on PEI. Like, you know, all my family's there and my nieces and nephews and stuff. And you know, having a home where it's like totally kind of, because it is, it's a quieter out there. It's kind of a slower pace. And it's kind of nice to get a little bit of inspiration, because I do spend a lot of time in, you know, in Toronto or, you know, just on the road, I guess, in general. So. Yeah, maybe someday I'll, you know, kind of do a bit of both, but as it is right now, yeah, just a lot of time on the road. So it is kind of nice to have that little bit of home base on the East Coast.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Canadian recording artist Tim Chasen. Make sure to check out his website, timchasen.com. Tim, talk to us about your new album, Lost in Light. Can you explain the title and what you want us to take away from the CD?
Yeah, Lost in Light is just a kind of a lyric from a song that I thought kind of suited the record. It was like, these songs are like kind of a collection of songs that I've written over the last like 2.5 or 3 years, I guess, just being on the road, traveling, writing with friends of mine, and, you know, going through like relationships and meeting different people. And some of them are like relationship based, but then there's like, you know, a song in there called Cajun Moon that's about kind of a different take on like the Acadian deportation that that happened, you know, back in 1700s on the East Coast. That just like kind of like a little bit of a sad love story. But just kind of writing about just where I'm at in my life, I guess, you know, being 28 years old and on the road all the time. And just kind of capturing the moment.
How was the recording process this time around? We mentioned that this is your third album. Did the songs come as easily as the first album? Because I think, you know, when an artist first comes out, they've got, you know, tons of stuff, especially because they've been working on it probably for a long time. But, you know, was it hard to get going again on this third one?
No, not really. Like, I enjoy the process of songwriting so much. With this one, it was just like I had about like 20-some songs that I wanted to pick from. I did a lot of demoing. Last winter, I spent about a month and a half like at home in Prince Edward Island. I set a little kind of like a little mini studio up in my house that I just like wrote and demoed like kind of like crazy, like all hours of the day. And, yeah, my girlfriend was like, "Are you ever coming out of that room?" But yeah, I spent so much time in there like just writing, and because knowing that I was going to be recording in June. It's just, you know, sometimes it's a little tougher. Like you might not, the inspiration might not like strike you right away, but, it's kind of one of those things. Like I find that if I, not like if I force myself, but if I'm like hook up like with a buddy of mine or a friend of mine, I'm like, hey, let's write a song together. And it's like, okay, let's do it tomorrow. And so it's like, it has to be done. So like our goal is to get a song out of this. And whenever you kind of go in with the expectation that you'll have a song, usually it happens, you know. If you're kind of like, I don't know, I don't see, like, you know, then you're not going to get anything. But usually just try to go into it with like the feeling like you're gonna get something out of it, and that usually always works out. So
who would you say has influenced you the most musically? Is it, you know, a well-known artist, or is it someone that's more close to your heart or closer to home?
Yeah, well, I would say like some of my biggest influences would be like some of my family members. Like some of my older brothers are really, really great musicians, and my father's a great player. So in the world of like fiddling and, you know, like mandolin and banjo and stuff like that, those are some of my bigger influences. And as far as songwriting goes, like I listen to so much different stuff. I was always like a huge fan of like James Taylor and Tom Petty, like kind of like that era of, songwriters where it's like stripped back and pretty simple. Like, you know, just like the guy up there with his guitar. And, so I always just was kind of intrigued by like the folk singer. And like just telling like a neat story and making it like, but I also love pop music too, and like something that kind of grabs you and with good lyrical content. And yeah.
You're heading out on tour with Juno Award winner Colin James. How did you actually land that gig, and what does it feel like to be, you know, going to be playing to his audiences?
Well, I think that's kind of one of those things that my agent got me that. It's like, I guess it's nothing really too crazy of a story, but I actually played a few, like two shows with Colin once before, and got to know him a little bit. He's a great guy, an amazing player. And whenever my agent was saying that he's going out on the road, and he just, you know, pitched me to him, and I guess he was into having me. So I, I'm really excited. I'm doing some stuff out east, and I'm doing some stuff out west. And then I'll do like a headlining tour in April of my own. Of like kind of as a headlining act, I guess, across Canada. So
what's it like being on the road? Because you've mentioned it quite a bit, obviously, that you know, you haven't actually been home since November, and you mentioned as well that you have a girlfriend. Like, is it difficult to sort of keep everything on the rails because you're not really home very much?
You know, sometimes it can be, but like it depends on, like, as far as like a relationship goes, it definitely depends on your partner and like what, like for me, like I did 2 months in Australia. I did a month tour. I guess I was in the UK for a couple of weeks before that, but I did a month tour of my own, and then my other band, we did a month tour, and my girlfriend just came. Like, she was able to, you know, she's a yoga teacher, so she's able to kind of take the time that she needs. And she just kind of came with me and was able to make it work. And I think there's ways to make it work. You just kind of have to like, just kind of do it, I guess. Like, because it's easy to just be like, oh, you know, we'll spend all this time with Parrot, and then I'll try to be home. And but if you, you know, it's like your life is like you're on the road. It's not like your life is at home. Like, you kind of have to make it work as you go. Mm-hmm. The only way.
You mentioned, you know, being over in the UK and then that tour in Australia. Do you have more plans to head overseas and, you know, try out different countries with your music?
Yeah, well, the plan is to kind of like try to get some more stuff in America as well. It's because it's so close. But yeah, keep focusing on Canada, do some stuff in America, and then yeah, hopefully head back to the UK before too long as well, because it went really well over there. So yeah.
And before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you your thoughts on social media. You know, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, I've been able to speak to so many artists that I think really see that social media, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, has become a tool for them to get the word out. Do you find that's the same for you? And are you addicted to any of them?
Yeah, you kind of need to. Like, you don't need to do anything, but it's fairly necessary if you're on the road, like, and just to kind of have like interaction with people in general, and then just people who like follow your music. It's just kind of makes it a little bit like, I know the bands that I like, and you know, it's kind of nice to see like them post a picture about whatever they're on the road or they're about to play a show, and just kind of like inside the life of you know, not necessarily even a band, but like someone who you follow that you look up to. So yeah, and it definitely can get addictive, but I try to stop myself by times or just shut my phone off for a couple hours here and there, just to like, because it's, you can spend like so much time on your phone between emailing and just keeping everything on the go. It's like, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Yeah, I would agree with you on that, Tim. That's for sure.
Yeah, like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. It's like, oh my God. Anyways, but the world we live in right now, I guess.
This is true. Tim, thank you so much for your time, and we wish you all the best of luck with the new album.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
That's Canadian recording artist Tim Chasen. Again, make sure to check out his website, timchasen.com.
Hey, this is Tim Chasen, and you're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Did a rush and did enough. I didn't see it coming. All of a sudden, there it was. Here we go again. Into my heart, under my skin. I wouldn't change a thing. I want to run. And I wanna give in. I shatter when we touch. Picking up the pieces. I'm falling in deeper. For a million little reasons. You got me crushed. Yeah, you got me. I won't close my eyes. It's not the kind of thing that happens twice in a perfect storm. We've got a fire, we'll watch it burn, and I wouldn't change a thing. I wanna run and I wanna give in. I'll never get too much. Picking up the pieces.
Yeah.
the show is singer-songwriter and guitarist Tamara Weber-Filion, who was born in Port-au-Prince but raised in Saint-Georges-de-Beauce, Quebec. Tamara talks to us about her first album, Time, Wind, and Fire, and her musical journey thus far, which includes a time as a contestant on the Quebec edition of The Voice. Tamara, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks. Hi.
Hi. So can you tell us how you actually got started in music?
Actually, I always was interested in that, so I listened to a lot of music. And when I was younger, I was like trying to do the same thing, to sing the same way that my favorite singer was singing. So kind of got to me that maybe I wanted to do that later.
And who would you say are your biggest influences? Like, which music did you listen to? And do you think that it actually plays a part in your sound today?
I actually listen to a lot of different music, but I do believe it's part of me right now. I listen to like pop music like Avril Lavigne and Justin Timberlake. I appreciate grunge music, R&B, Pearl Jam. And I listen to a lot of folk like Tracy Chapman and Simon and Garfunkel. And my favorite folk singer is like Elliott Smith. And all these different influences are showing in my music right now.
Now, how is the musical scene where you are actually from in La Beauce? Is it growing? And do you think that you can stay there and be a successful artist? Or do you think you're going to have to maybe move to Montreal or somewhere else?
I don't live in La Beauce anymore. I spent 6 years in Quebec City and now I moved to Montreal.
Okay.
And I don't think the musical industry in St. George is it's a small city. It's a small city. There's a little bit of shows, but I don't think it's a place to stay if you want to make a career out of it.
Now, how did you actually appear on The Voice here in Quebec? Was it a long process? Was it hard to get chosen?
Actually, for me, it was like it just happened. I was there with my friend who wanted to do the auditions. I wasn't planning to do them myself, but since I waited like two or three hours in line with her, I did it since I was there, and I got chosen.
And what was that like when you got chosen? Was it, you know, just incredible news? And then how far did you actually make it on the show?
It was interesting. I didn't expect that, so I was happy. Kind of sad for my friend, though, but she's on the show this year, so it's okay. Since I wasn't planning to do it at all, it was cool for me. I was just a little bit sad because I didn't have the chance to show what I was doing because I got some awkward songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not my type of song, and not something that made my voice value. But
okay.
It was still a fun experience.
Excellent. Joining us on the show is singer-songwriter and guitarist Tamara Weber-Filion. Make sure to check out her website, tamarawf.com. Now, how did you start working on your debut album? How did it come together?
First song I wrote was Untitled Heartbeats. When I was younger, I was writing some songs in my house, but nothing really professional. And I didn't really believe that this was professional, but I sent the song to my parents and they freaked out. They were like, oh, you have something, you need to share it to the world. And somebody heard the song like that also and asked me to come and play in his bar every week. So for 2 years, I played twice a week in a bar, and that's how I started to play professionally.
And do you find that your album has a theme or is it a collection of different songs?
I think it has a theme, but it wasn't meant to be. But yes, it has a theme of love and heartbreaks and difficulties of a young adult going to life, true life.
And when it comes to the album and touring, do you plan to tour a lot around Quebec and maybe outside into other provinces?
I want to tour the most I can. I will do. I enjoy being on the road. I enjoy playing. I think I don't play enough for me. I'd like to play more.
Okay. And have you ever played yet outside the province? Like, have you gone to Ontario or anywhere else?
Ontario, not yet, but I went to Newfoundland and we'll come up.
Now, talk to us a little bit about... you know, because obviously when you're speaking to me now, you have a bit of an accent, obviously a French accent. But when you're singing, I've heard your song, Love in the Snow, which sounds amazing. And your accent is completely gone. Do you find, I know a lot of, you know, singers have that, even British artists when they sing English, or sorry, in English, it doesn't sound like they're from Britain. Do you find that it's easier for you to sing in English or French?
It's easier for me in English. I don't know why. I know I have an accent. I was raised in a bilingual environment that I went to school in French. So even though I know my words, my vocabulary, it doesn't come that easily for me in a conversation. But when I sing, I think in English, and when I write, I don't know why. I'm not even able to write a song in French.
Oh, okay. So that's good to know.
It's weird, but I...
That's good. So then do you think you'll ever want to tackle like a French album, or do you think your career is going to be based in English music?
It won't happen for a French album. I'd like to write a song in French and maybe more.
Okay.
But it's just something that... music for me is something instinctive, so... I won't force myself to do something that just doesn't come. It's supposed to be about feelings and everything else. So I won't rush that.
Okay, excellent. And I have to tell you before I let you go, I found when I was hearing Love in the Snow, you actually sound like a little bit like Lauryn Hill from back in the day.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was great. So
oh,
good,
that's cool.
good job.
That's
cool. Is there any artist, whether a Quebec artist or even a Canadian artist or someone else that you would like to collaborate with one day?
Rain Maida.
Oh, right,
the lead singer from Our Lady Peace.
Okay.
The one of the artists that inspired me the most through my musical career.
Cool. That's great. You know what? I think you should also try to meet Serena Ryder. I think like the two of you would get along very well.
You think?
I do. I think so.
I listen to her stuff. I love it, but I just don't know how to do that kind of stuff, but that would be great, I think.
Yeah, I think you guys would get along very great, and she's a really sweet girl. Before I let you go, what a message do you have for potential new fans of Tamara Weber-Filion? Because we have people listening not only in Montreal, but also over in Japan and Australia and even England. If people, obviously, they can check out your website, tamarawf.com, but what do you want them to know about you, the artist?
I want them to know that I'm here for the good reason, and that therapy, music is like a therapy for me, and I believe it can be a therapy for them also. And I love them all.
Excellent. That's great. Tamara, we wish you all the best, and thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week.
Thanks to you.
That is singer-songwriter and guitarist Tamara Weber-Filion. Again, make sure to check out her website, tamarawf.com.
Love and the snow is making us grow.
Show.
snow. Love in the snow. Love in the snow.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending time with us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to my guests, actor Jason Thompson, Lindsay Mack, Tim Chasen, and Tamara Weber-Filion. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from singer Mary J. Blige. You can't get around pain and opposition, but you can try to be joyful in the trial and thank yourself for the trial and thank God for the strength to get through it. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.